operated by someone which is malicious application at all. So particularly for in-house developed applications, the developers sometimes, you know, they're business type developers which might, you know, might be specializing in back-end systems. They just don't have the experience that's required to understand the web, because the web is a very dangerous programming applications out there, and usually they contain the most business sort of that we secure the web applications. Now, as you would have heard yesterday, the OWASP is an excellent step forward in developing and formulating standards for actually enforcing coding standards. So you can actually say to your developers, you must follow the OWASP guidelines in developing this application in architect, commercial, third-party application that was purchased, you know, for a business. And, you know, if particularly if we are outsourcing our development as well, we don't really have much influence on that. So we have the combination of very high-risk profile, exposed application. Defaced applications really are very bad from a public perspective basis, as I mentioned, is actually located on a trusted network. So if an attacker is able to actually elevate that and use the back-end channel to gain access of the database to the database server and then use that to attack more secured networks, which are normally not accessible directly by the internet. So it's a risky thing. So how do we mitigate this sort of, because a lot of the time the web applications are specially written, and so or you know, written in PHP or whatever. Quite often people would modify this, you know, to change the look and feel and customize it. And then even if there was a vulnerability found in the bulletin board like PHP, BB or whatever, then it's quite difficult to actually retrofit the patch into your code. Mention that. But really, the best way to ensure that our code is secure, their own code, they quite often miss things because they have some kind of assumptions about the way the code works, because you know they've sort of developed it under those assumptions. And quite often, it's difficult to sort of step out of context and look at something, you know, in a different light. So, for instance, if you make an assumption, someone that really has no idea how the application was designed, but is looking at the OWASP. And when you do a thorough code audit, you can actually reveal security vulnerabilities that that wouldn't have been found otherwise, you know, by the developers. But the problem is that, that, I mean, the reality is a little bit different. Of course, we all know that. People rarely do a thorough, you know, you need to look at, because it's time-consuming. It takes a lot of time and the number of lines in your code. Now, if you're a bank and this is a really crucial application, that's not a problem because you can afford that. The application can warrant spending that sort of money. But if it's sort of like a small to medium enterprise and this is an average sort of application, it just doesn't make sense to spend that kind of money on... A lot of people don't bother to do a third-party code audit of that because they figure that the vendor, well, so we shouldn't really audit that. So most people just accept it as a product, as a, you know, a closed sort of shrink-pack product and just use it. And so... Often an application could be really large. It would be too large to audit. Like if for example, you are a small, medium enterprise and, you know, it just would take far too long to be able to do this. So that's why is a solution that allows us to achieve a reasonable level of security with a minimum expended effort. So what we are after here is a 80-20 rule. We want to invest 20% of effort and catch 80% of the problems, right? So this is kind of a risk decision, and it's not really for everybody. If you want, you can afford to spend the money to do the thorough look at. But for the general, more or less secure. So here's an example. For example, the reason why we put a firewall. Someone has actually told me once that firewalls are a totally superfluous piece of equipment, because if you have your servers hardened, if all your servers are hardened, all your services are turned off, if you don't have any, people don't have that ability to mandate that, you know, so quite often accidents happen and a server cover your bad butt activity, and then basically it doesn't take much effort, but at least it achieves 80% of the security, you know, by chucking a firewall in front. I'm not saying a firewall is the only means of security, but it helps, and you use it effectively to try and that can happen in a web application. And of course, the OWASP has a, you know, the first area is the logical errors. Then we have flow control errors, and then we have input validation problems. And I'll just explain each of them in detail. So a logical error. So what is a logical error? Basically, a logical error is misimplementation of business logic, you know, and is not authenticated to the forum of defining how the application should behave. But for example, if we misimplemented the application, there may be a way for which the user that hasn't logged on, you know, is still able to post to the forum, right? So that's a kind of security failure that our application has failed to enforce the business, and that's actually really hard, particularly from a third-party perspective when you're not, you know. So you have to create a user that, you know, is not privileged, and then try and do all these things that you're not supposed to do, etc. So you really need to address it by a very thorough application testing, regression testing type mechanism. Even cloud audits are really hard to test. In the sequence of requests, this one is supposed to be. So each request is complete that the application is trying to enforce a certain order which users need to do stuff, you know. That's flow control. Then it really needs to make sure that it knows which request comes at which time and how they are related in the sequence. Have session cookies already built in. But it's important the session for each request and how it's actually related to each other. And again, we might use testing to work that out. Here's an example of a flowed application. Just to clarify this flow control issue, here's an example of a flowed application. So, for example, suppose that we have an application, and then which would be a form perhaps, and then that form will pass the username and password number to page 3, which actually gives them a menu of, you know, viewing the data. Let's suppose for this particular hypothetical application. Now, this is a flawed approach because what's actually happening here is that page 2 is like maybe it's a redirect or something. Page 2 actually is relying on this particular application. A user can just come up with a user ID and account number if they can guess fails to enforce flow control on the process of logging in. And so this can be fixed by basically doing something like this. The first page logs on the user as per normal. Page 2 actually, instead of passing the parameters that are required to the user, they present that session ID back to the application, whereby flow control is enforced by passing critical data through an out-of-band mechanism. We're not relying on the user to pass that critical data between different pages. So if page 3 actually ensures that there is a valid session, that the session ID that it gets is actually valid, and the number, and then expect the application to actually do something useful with it, you really need to get a feel to whether the application actually does that properly by looking at the way that the application actually requires the user to go through steps, and then looking at the session cookies and making sure that the cookies are enforced throughout. So that sort of applications for web applications. I think it really sort of stems from the fact that ASP, VB, and all this sort of stuff, which is sort of designed to dumb down the whole programming thing, you know, so that people can write code. You know, essentially web developers can cut code, which is really not appropriate. So the point is that really there is no type error. So here's an example of an SQL injection. These epicenters, which are sort of these funny. The epicenters mean concatenation, anyway. And so what we've got is we've got an SQL statement which is built on the fly, taking variables from the user. So we've got select star from table users where user logon ID equals, this is actually a statement out of username and a password, and then it does a select on the database, and we can see that an example is select star from table users where user logon ID equals Michael, and user password equals password. So if I was to type this into the form, then it would actually sort of work. It will actually query the database. If Michael and password was in the table from the form variables. And so when we actually try and say, start from table user, we use login ID equals Michael, and user password equals password, or G equals G, right? Now, G equals G is a tautology. It's always true, right? So what will actually happen is that when that statement is issued to the database will go, well, okay, you know, there isn't really a Michael and password in here, but G to essentially alter the logic of the application of the SQL statement from the one originally envisioned by the designers. So when the designers thought of the SQL, they actually didn't think that we could change it, the meaning like that. So this is an example of input validation problems, because we're able to put in something unexpected into the input, back to the screen at you. So for example, imagine that into the application, and then the application says, you know, hi Michael, right? And it takes that and then echoes it back to the screen at you. The problem with that is that what you can do is you can actually change that by adding HTML code to the input variable. And when the object script, JavaScript, then you're able to execute JavaScript when the user wants to run, and JavaScript that someone else caused the application to echo accidentally to the screen, right? Now this is very dangerous, because with JavaScript, you're able to access any cookies within that domain, the domain of the server. So for example, if you're relying on cookies for authenticate, you can just use that, and they will have a valid session, they're able to take over the session. So it's, right. Now, most people think that that if you just filter script tags, that's good enough. And there's a lot of examples of cross-site scripting protection, where you can actually, where you've got, you know, you're filtering script tags, you have regular expressions that try and match script tags. The anchor tag, the JavaScript gets executed straight away. And we don't have, so we have these three classes of problems that we already mentioned. The first class we said was difficult to actually properly test against, because it's business logic related. It's probably more than security, it's probably more to do with reliability and you know, application testing. Problems was the input validation problem. And the input validation problem is by far when we are actually doing a HTTP transaction. So here we have a client, and they're just about to interact with this server. And so what they're actually doing is they're using a web page and making a URL, a HTTP access, which might have a URL in it. It might also have some post variables, might have some these variables that are passed. There is no other information. So we arrive into the server, and we need to just check those. So let's have a look at how we are proposing to solve this. So what I'm proposing to sort of do is build some kind of a security layer or something that's intelligent that will intercept those parameters, those URLs, that these packets don't look alright, and then blocks the ones that don't look alright, and then a firewall or something like that, a web application firewall, this kind of stuff. So what we are actually doing here is what we're saying is, okay, we don't care about the application. The application can do whatever it wants with the data. We don't care about it. We don't trust it anyway, because we don't trust the people that wrote it. So the application rolls, right? And if it doesn't do its own validation, a little bit about other products later on. But this is the fundamental problem. The security layer has no idea what is valid and what is not valid. It just doesn't know, because the application really uses the inputs, the parameters, according to, you know, how it sees fit. But if you're writing a security layer of bad things, you know, try and guess what's a bad thing look like. You know, maybe if we see some rules that are put in. But really, the best solution is if the security layer actually knows how the application works, exactly how the application works, and so it can do the validation according to exactly how the application expects. Right? So there's got to be a way for which there's several types, and we're going to do validation against those types. And this choice, but it's very important. Numeric types are very important, because quite often when an application actually is expecting a numeric type, they might do something like select blah from blah, where you know, ID equals in your inputs. In which case, you know, magic quotes in PHP is not going to help you, etc. Parameter is numeric. A word basically is something which doesn't have any space in it. You know, so like this is an example of where you would use a numeric one. Multi-word may contain space, but it's not allowed to contain any tags whatsoever. So you can't have any tags. And this is going to fix that for cross-site scripting. So these are the types. Okay, so how do we know which parameter is which? remember, we need to really know about what the application is trying to do with these parameters. So what we're going to do is we're going to have two modes. There's a learning mode and an enforcement mode. So the learning mode basically says it just logs all the parameters that go into all the pages in real. And then what we do is, so when we actually have acceptance testing of the application, the error is going to sit there and just log everything that happens, right? Then what we can do is we can take that log and have a look at all the parameters that are used and what kind of values they take on, right? And providing that we use the application in the same way, in the same manner, then those values will be indicative of the type of assumptions that are made, classes that I mentioned before, and then you have a choice. If you have a parameter that's out of that assumption, it doesn't fall within that category, then you can say, okay, the parameter doesn't conform, so I can either stop the transaction altogether, so I can just spit out an error page to the user saying to just log everything to syslog. So basically, it just says something like, I don't know, basically you have an idea of the kind of values that this thing can take on. And so what you do is you record all these parameters and then train the security layer on the types, right? And then basically, once you're satisfied that everything is good, you turn it on and test again to make sure that if you made a mistake and you put it in the wrong class, then it will stop the transaction. Remember that type that we said that if something should be able to contain HTML. Most types do not allow HTML at all, so there's no cross-site scripting issues. But sometimes we really need to allow HTML to come in, particularly because, there's a lot of bulletin boards that allow users to, to use HTML to mark up their post into something that makes sense. Input of the tag was almost over, for example, and that is an attribute. And then special type of other things need to be treated, like the href can contain JavaScript by itself and slightly different things like that. So you need to tune it for each tag a little bit as well. So here's an example. Say someone was written, something that will pop on the screen, but it can be more malicious JavaScript. And in my case, I decided to coerce it, but you can actually just reject it outright and just go, hey, I'm not allowing this JavaScript stuff, that's not good. But so basically what I do is I coerce it into that, right? So it's just this is not really a huge security issue. It's only a little one, but it's really an example. Say, for example, they put in something like this, table TRTD, something, and they forget to close their TRTDs and tables, right? Then actually what happens is that when that gets inserted into the general GUI, into the forum, then the browsers actually try and sort of, it's obviously an example down there is what happens if they submit malformed. Most browsers will look at it, and when they see that closing TR, they'll actually ignore the TD, and then when they see the closing TD, they actually, and it really depends on the browser, they'll actually do something freaky with the other sort of thing. Here's an example of what it looks like. This is out of a bulletin board. Not a huge security issue, but it's just annoying. And so what we actually want to do, security layer basically operating, and if it detects an incorrect nesting, that the nesting is not correct, it actually chucks a fatal error saying, ooh, you have an invalid nested HTML, hit the back button and try again. Now, that actually happens, well, really we could probably put it into a module of mode security or something like that, but anyway, to force the security layer to be run for every single page in the application, and that's quite easy. There is a PHP pre-append feature. We can just go into the init file and just, pre-append security layer. That's it. So then it actually basically gets fired off for every single request. So in this case, I don't know if you guys are familiar with PHP. The way that it works is /get and /cookies, and then the application can just access them out of that. Now, this is quite interesting because it goes back to what Andrew was saying yesterday, that PHP 3, of course, had the ability to register globals, which means that all of those parameters automatically appeared in new versions of PHP in order to... So rather than fixing... Anyway, the problem is that that those globals need to be fixed. So what the security layer does is it actually goes through all of the globals and makes sure that all the parameters are correct. And it ensures that there are no other parameters that it hasn't looked at that are sort of, you know, that exist elsewhere about some alternatives. And as I mentioned before, the whole concept of this application, web application, mature example of such a thing is a thing called mod security. And basically, it's www.modsecurity.org. And it's actually an Apache module which can be loaded into Apache. And I think it's even in Debian, just go apt-get install mod between that and our approach. Our approach, we actually train the application. So, for example, it can't use any HTML script tag anywhere. Like, it doesn't really, by default, it doesn't really have the concept that this parameter is allowed to be of this type, this parameter is allowed to be of this type. It's not really that fine-grained. But you can actually configure it to do that by putting in, like, very specific rules, but then it's a bit of a pain because you have to really... there's a post here. I didn't really have space on the slide to actually put the whole thing, but the main flow in intrusion detection systems is that if the attacker can craft the attack in such a way that it doesn't happen to match that regular expression that's in that application detection system, then it actually is allowed to pass through and then get to the problem is really that there's a problem with the philosophy with mod security and see what's bad and then try and stop it if it's bad. Whereas sort of what we did was a bit different because we looked at the parameters and only allowed those that were good through, if they were bad, we either stopped the application or we actually coerced them into goodness, if you like. The other problem with this is that by default there's no real sort of, so it basically enforces it for everything, which is really hard to work with, sort of too coarse grained, and there's no training. So in conclusion, what we actually did is, by using the security layer, we were able to. And by the way, I forgot to mention that since we actually deployed this thing, there was about four or five vulnerabilities in testing against your application, and you can see that your application will just not suit our site, and we really couldn't just deploy a patch against it. You know, it would have been like just sitting there with the code and just like going, oh, you know, doing manual sort of patching because it was modified too much. You know? Okay, so. Right, so using the training mode is really the thing that I think is the most. We really, this method doesn't help you with this. You really need to flow control issues because you will see cookies being passed from page to page, and then you can go back and have a look at the different pages that actually get those cookies, and just ensure that they actually look at those cookies in the first place, the session IDs, so they actually check that there is a valid session that. Is like black box testing. Sometimes, as I mentioned before, when you do a code audit, the application is just far too large to actually sit down and read the code because it's just too big. So if you don't have a lot of time, you can do a technique called black box auditing where you actually try and look at the inputs and outputs of an application and try and tools that do it that are a bit better than what we've done, which sort of catalog it, and certainly a really useful technique. Yep. Any more questions? No? Oh, yes? Right, so what you're saying, to really enhance the functionality a little bit more because servers and lots of different applications and different rules really should be applied to different ones. So you need to have that sort of functionality where you can say, okay, you know, the request is going to this server and this is the set of rules that belong to this guy. Enforce that. So, yeah, certainly that's a possible future. Yes. Side. All right. On the client side. A rewriting proxy for it. Right. So, we'll see. I mean, generally, you don't really put security things on the client side because. But to protect the client from malicious servers. Yeah. But the whole point here is to try and protect the... Yeah, that's certainly possible, yeah. What you're saying makes a lot of sense because... and it does it. That's certainly possible. It should be done by the application. So if the application is about to parse a command, if you give it a command that it doesn't, you know, understand, then it should go, hey, I don't understand this command. So that's sort of what it should be doing. Right. Commands that can be passed in from the external side. That's excellent what you're saying, because that kind of logic should really be designed into the application, but if we are able, often it's not, exactly. So if we are able to put it... Yep. Oops. Right. To anyone that looked at the code, what is actually allowed and what's not. So if you were to do a source code audit, you just look at the filtration module, and then you can immediately see all of the validation and the business logic that happens there. So that's an excellent idea. Yes, thank you. Pardon? Page, where everything sort of goes through in one place, you know. Okay, excellent. Sorry? Yeah? Yeah, absolutely. It is possible. As I said, yeah, mod security is an excellent tool, don't get me wrong. And it's a really good step in the right direction. I'm a bit more verbose than sort of what we did, but it's, yeah, so it's possible though, I guess. Yeah. Running too, yeah. Absolutely. And as I said, mod security is a better solution anyway, because it would actually work, you know, if you have like, you know, JSP pages, and then you might have a proxy that actually goes out into another server or something like mod proxy, and then we'll have Samuel.